Welcome to Sojourner Truth exclusively on Pacifica Radio and its affiliate networks. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, we are honored to have in studio artist Lane. She is the descendant of slaves who migrated to Canada by the Underground Railroad. She is a family to the famous abolitionist, educator, newswoman, and first black woman to vote in Washington, D.C., Mary Ann Shaw Carey. Artist Lane was the personal artist to Mrs. Rosa Parks and the sculptor of Sojourner Truth. Yes, you heard that, the sculptor of Sojourner Truth. In 2009, artist Lane was the first black woman to have a sculpture placed in the capital of the United States. The Sojourner Truth sculpture unveiled in a ceremony by First Lady Michelle Obama and installed in Emancipation Hall of the United States Capitol. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandari. The threat of a full-blown conflict between Israel and Hezbollah increased after the Lebanese group fired a missile at an Israeli army vehicle along the border. The attack was in apparent retaliation for a January 18th Israeli airstrike in southern Syria that killed several Hezbollah members as well as an Iranian general. It came hours after airstrikes by Israeli jets near the occupied Golan Heights overnight, which Israel's military said was in response to rocket fire from Syria. An Israeli military spokesman said there were Israeli casualties in the Hezbollah attack, but did not elaborate. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel would respond forcefully. His remarks were translated by Al Jazeera Television.
The IDF is responding to events in the north. To everyone who is trying to challenge us at the northern border, I advise them to consider what happened there, not far from the city of Sderot in Gaza. Hamas took its hardest hit since its formation, and the IDF is prepared to act strongly on all fronts.
A Spanish member of the United Nations peacekeeping force in southern Lebanon was killed as Israel conducted airstrikes after the Hezbollah attack. It is the most serious confrontation since 2006, when Hezbollah and Israel fought a 34-day war in which 120 people in Israel and more than 500 Lebanese were killed. Speaking on Al Jazeera, Salman Sheikh from the Brookings Doha Center said it's too soon to tell whether this conflict will widen.
This is a very, very serious incident. We are right now in a phase of escalation. Now, whether we go into free fall and we get more escalation, or whether we're able to get international actors like the UN, the US and others to exert some influence for there not to be a further escalation, we'll know in the next 24 hours, frankly.
The latest clash comes as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is campaigning ahead of Israeli parliamentary elections on March 17th. Jordan says if its pilot captured by the Islamic State group in December is released unharmed, it will free an Iraqi woman who was sentenced to death after being convicted of a deadly 2005 hotel bombing that killed 60 people. The Islamic State said if she's not released, they'll kill the Jordanian pilot and a Japanese journalist. President Obama's Attorney General nominee Loretta Lynch faces a Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearing this morning. Lynch would be the first African-American woman to hold the nation's top law enforcement job. She's widely expected to win confirmation, but is certain to face tough questions from Republicans who now control the Senate. The hearing gives them an opportunity to press their opposition to Obama administration policies, like the president's executive actions on immigration that granted reprieves from deportation to millions of this nation's undocumented residents. Lynch's hearing also comes amid a nationwide spotlight on police tactics in the wake of the high-profile deaths of unarmed African-American men at the hands of white police officers. Lynch is the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of New York. The Mormon Church has announced a campaign for new laws that protect gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people from discrimination while also protecting people who assert their religious beliefs. Elder Dallin Oaks spoke alongside other Mormon leaders in Utah.
State legislatures across the nation are being asked to strengthen laws relating to LGBT issues in the interest of ensuring fair access to housing and employment. The leadership of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is on record as favoring such measures.
Mormon leaders did not explain just how they would draw lines between gay rights and religious freedoms, and it's unclear how much common ground the church will gain with this campaign. The gay rights group Equality Utah welcomed the statement, saying LGBT rights can coexist with freedoms of religious individuals, but the legal director for the Human Rights Campaign called the Mormon proposal deeply flawed. He said the proposal from the Mormon Church could, for instance, allow a doctor to refuse to care for a lesbian because of religious beliefs. Such refusal could involve a lesbian seeking artificial insemination. New Englanders affected by a blizzard packing knee-high snowfall and hurricane-force winds are digging out. The storm buried the Boston area in more than 2 feet of snow and lashed it with howling winds that exceeded 70 miles per hour. Today, Boston Public Transit is running and Amtrak trains to New York and Washington are rolling on a limited schedule. I'm Eileen Alfandera. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
That was our news headlines. Our in-studio guest, artist Lane by age 15, had received two major awards for her creative painting and other artworks. She moved to New York City. She broke color barriers in the art world. She adopted the philosophy of the civil rights icon Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune about bearing the responsibility of being the first. Artist Lane was the first Black portrait artist in the 400-member Portraits Incorporated. It's an agency that matched artists and subjects, and the first Black woman to have her work displayed in the National Portrait Gallery of the Smithsonian Institution, a bronze portrait of Rosa Parks, and as we said in our introduction, had the honor of being the first Black woman to have a sculpture placed in the U.S. Capitol, the Sojourner Truth sculpture, we're happy to say, unveiled in a ceremony in which First Lady Michelle Obama and other dignitaries were present. Artist Lane, it's such an honor to have you in studio. Thank you for joining us.
It's an honor to be here.
What we would like to do is we would like to share with our audience a clip about you and your work, especially on the Sojourner Truth sculpture. Let's go to that right now.
She was born with the name Artis, and for most of her 82 years, Artis Lane has been living up to that name, sculpting and painting for as long as she can remember.
I'm graced to have this ability, the gift, to see something formed.
And found in homes, in museums, in public spaces around the country. She's one of the most accomplished African-American artists alive. She painted a portrait of Hillary Clinton, sculpted Presidents Reagan and Obama. Her bust of Rosa Parks, a version, sits in the Smithsonian. And today, in the U.S. Capitol, Michelle Obama unveiled Lane's most significant work, a statue of Sojourner Truth, freed slave, outspoken abolitionist, fierce and famous fighter for women's rights at the end of the 19th century. It was a long journey for Sojourner Truth to get to the U.S. Capitol. The National Congress of Black Women started pushing for this a decade ago. It's been a long journey for artist Lane, too. She says she strives to make her works uplifting, and in recent years, she's felt compelled to tell the story of African Americans through her art.
You've got to give back. You've got to make statements about our contributions.
Today, artist Lane became the first African American woman ever to have a sculpture placed in the Capitol. And Sojourner Truth, the first African-American woman to take her place among the nation's heroes.
I'm so proud to be.
And Lane says, like the generations of black women there today, she's thrilled to be adding truth to American history.
There you go, a roundup of some of the work of Artist Lane. Artist Lane, you have been so honored, a retrospective of your work at the California African American Museum and so much more. I wanted to find out a little bit more about you and your early days, because you were not born in the United States, but you have that direct connection with the United States. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. Our family on my mother's side, mm-hmm. her name was Julia Shad. My birth name was Artis Shreve. Mm-hmm. Abraham Shad in the 1800s, 1850s, brought his whole family up into, from Delaware, in Quaker educated, up into Canada, Ontario, southern Ontario, across the border, mm-hmm. and came there to teach the slaves and to also, later Mary Ann Shad Carey, his daughter, started a paper to let the slaves know what was going on in Canada, the privileges and the situation of being offered land if they worked it and to become citizens.
Mm-hmm. So
at the time when slavery yeah. was still going on,
Was still going on in the United States. Mm-hmm. So, in part, he was clearly able to read and write, and the purpose to educate other slaves. But do you think it was also getting away from the situation in the United States, because there were a number of people of African descent, people who were enslaved, that were fleeing into Canada?
Yes, that's a mistake to say the family. We were slaves, because their only ancestry recognized was in 1700, mm-hmm. when an indentured slave, woman, illegally married to a Dutch or German person, and so that's our ancestry.
All right.
But we were here to teach what we'd been taught by the Quakers, mm-hmm. the English language, you know, the slaves, many of them. It's amazing how they adapted so quickly to the language.
So how, now that, where you were, the all-black village, Chatham.
North Buxton, Ontario,
mm-hmm. right. That was a stop in the Underground Railroad.
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. Across the Detroit-Windsor border.
Did you hear stories about that from your
all
family?
I was born during the Depression years, mm-hmm. and in 1927, my father moved to Ann Arbor, Michigan, to get work.
Okay.
He was a farmer, but he had the highest IQ in the village, mm-hmm. North Buxton. He called himself a doctor of motors. He was a mechanic.
Okay.
And so
a farmer and a mechanic.
Right.
And
right,
clearly yes. very, very bright.
Yes, yes.
His own genius.
Yes, and mm-hmm. very good looking. And my mother said she got the best of the village. And the Shreve Shad family in numbers were more predominant in that village. Mm-hmm. There was also a Lucas family. I'm so proud, blessed to have had a British education, but always we knew about history of our culture, of our
yeah,
race.
Of yes. course. Mm-hmm. Of course. And then a relative of Mary Ann Shad mm-hmm. Carey.
She married Mr. Mm-hmm. Carey.
Mm-hmm. Right. Tell us a bit about her. She was an abolitionist?
Absolutely. And mm-hmm. the first woman to create a newspaper called the Provincial Freeman, which went down, was brought back into the States to let people of color be invited, not some ministers, some slaves, all of the different qualities. Mm-hmm. And she began teaching there and was supposed to have been funded, but they gave her a terrible old soldier's building to teach mm-hmm. the children in. She had such a hard life, and moved mm-hmm. up to Toronto, Canada. Mm. And I heard these because when we were brought back from Ann Arbor, every summer we would go and stay with my grandparents on mm-hmm. my mother's side, the Shad family.
And so that's how we always, from childhood, heard about this heroine, Mary Shedd Carey. As I grew older, being an artist, my grandfather, they used to have what they call threshings, where all the farmers would help each other in farming the land.
Okay.
And I remember the tall corn stalks. I used to follow my grandfather, Flavia Shedd. In fact, Garrison, they would Abraham Shedd harbored slaves in their basement along with...
They sheltered them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They in order to, for that Underground Railway trail, endangering their own lives, but
yes.
They had a white abolitionist. His name was Mr. Garrison.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an uncle, Garrison, who was named after him. So that all-black village became a center. We would have Americans in the 1800s, many after the abolition of slavery was abolished,
mm-hmm.
they would return to the United States. But those who stayed, predominantly the Shadds and Shreves in that all-black village,
mm-hmm.
along with a Lucas family, and Rue, Howard Rue, we were very cognizant of our history and followed it and held, you know, many of them are writers like Mary Ann Shedd Carey.
Mm-hmm.
I have an aunt who wrote books that were honored in Canada of the development of communities through churches.
Yeah.
And you'd have in one village maybe three different churches, but the minister would bring their flock to and settle there. So there was only one all-white family in that village, and they had the grocery store.
In the all-black village,
one grocery store. There was a black post office.
Okay.
It was owned by a cousin of mine. And mm-hmm. It developed to be, it became very popular for Americans to come up on Emancipation Day, where all the relatives, they started counting how many would come up. So, and it was, if you can imagine, around the church, of course.
Right, a whole and then, community.
Yes, uh-huh. of people gathering and trading stories. And many of them very accomplished, because the whole point of Mary Ann Shedd Carey was that we be educated and also, but to also not to segregate, but to mingle in with the majority, the larger mm-hmm. community.
Yes.
Native Americans. There are some Native Americans in our family that just one aspect of it, but mostly it was African and mm-hmm. Dutch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because a number of Native American people also fled across that border. Of course, for them, that the idea of the border was new in that way. And there are still communities in Canada. I remember my daughter was studying there in Waterloo for a while, and she used to take these trips and go to some of the, you know, the older black areas, you know, in Canada.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
a lot of history there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Our next door, we moved out of the village when we had to go to high school into the city of Chatham, Ontario. Mm-hmm. And our next door neighbors, he had been a former chieftain. The last name, their Americanized name, was Day.
So in the middle of all of that, clearly in your background, people who were well-educated, who wrote, mm-hmm. who did the work of gathering the people and making mm-hmm. sure there was a community and a cultural base,
mm-hmm.
and which helped to promote a certain level of self-esteem, you know, about oneself.
Mm-hmm.
So in the middle of that milieu, here is little artist running around
with a strange name, artist. That they
being an
about.
Artist. I mean, at what point did you discover that you really had this talent?
Well, I do remember my grandmother showing me a photograph, an original painting of my aunt and my sister's sister, my mother's sister, rather. And I looked at that. It was just a still life in Grandma's house. And I knew that this is what I was going to be.
Isn't that something?
Yes. No, but then I also had
an epiphany. And you were quite young.
Oh, preschool. He owned acreage that had a stream that ran through it, and no one told me. I would take the mud along that stream and create dolls from...
Out of the mud?
Yes, that my grandmother had found a broken doll, porcelain head. You know how those porcelain head are hands and feet, and the rest was an old rag. It was
rag
an old doll.
Yeah.
So I started, and I knew that I knew intuitively to place them under the shade of a high porch, in the shade where they wouldn't dry too quickly. And my aunt,
how did you know this?
To $100. It's all God-given. I know that the gift is given. The name, my mother naming me that.
Artist.
So all my life, that's all always been talked about.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That was and did your family recognize that? I mean, was it encouraged? Did they say, oh, there goes that child making those mud dolls again?
Well, that was one happening. But what happened in my family, there were five children, one brother. Mm-hmm. Four girls, and I was the first to start drawing, but two others, and we were very competitive, Carol and Dolores, they didn't want to be, they'd heard about me in the papers, newspaper as Queen of the Beaux Arts Ball in Toronto, and that they had spreads in the, because Canadians did not know what to do with our race. There were so few of us. And in fact, they described me as dusky. That's the closest
dusky.
I could come. Couldn't figure out. You know, I was in those days, when I was 18 at college, that they were describing me in the newspaper coverage as a dusky, slight, intelligent, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
But the one thing that brought me up short was that every year the Queen of the Beaux Arts Ball was presented with, they sat for an oil portrait. The senior artist, he did beautiful portraits, he refused to paint me the color issue. And I'm so saddened to say that when... we would hear about African Americans, we always saw that they were very bold. Mm-hmm. They would talk back or whatever. In Canada, we were very reserved, all that sort of British influence, but also quite naive in the sense that Americans, we got our reputation in Detroit. The African American young men would consider us good wife material. Probably virginal, very, you know, the country girl, what have you. but the education was really stressed in our Shad family, and I'm very grateful for that.
So the awards that you won at age 15, I want to go back a little bit to this refusal to do your portrait, which is just such an outrageous story. Was that after the awards that you won when you were about 15, was that later?
Well, after the Queen of the Beaux Arts Ball, that's when they
noticed. When did that happen, that ball? Was that like a high school? Around what age were you?
Let's see. I was 18, 19.
Okay.
Went there, but met a man from Mississippi. We went. I was given a job at a wonderful Detroit beauty parlor. A gorgeous, very dark black woman who had been up in Alaska, made a lot of money there, formed a house of beauty in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And on summer vacation, their brother got me the job to do the cosmetics, the makeup. And I didn't even know what a cosmetologist was. My whole goal was to study fine art so that anything that smacked of the commercial was foreign to me. Carrying on the dream, my mother would say, artist, you've got to either be a teacher or be a commercial artist. You'll never make a living. But I knew that I knew.
You had to do it.
Yes.
It was something just within you.
Yes, yes.
This is Margaret Prescott, and our in-studio guest is artist Lane, very well-known artist, sculptor. She did the sculpture of Sojourner Truth and back in 2009, the first black woman ever to have a sculpture placed in the United States Capitol. And I'm delighted to say that that was a sculpture of Sojourner Truth. And, of course, our listeners know that this show was named after Sojourner Truth. She's such a hero of mine. What I would like to do now, I want to return to your story, but where you did the sculpture of Sojourner Truth, so I know you had to really, just looking at what you did, some way, somehow, that God-given talent, as you would say, you were able to capture something, just looking at that and just the light and the power coming from your sculpture. So I wanted for our audience to play a clip of Bobby Washington, who is an actress, and she is speaking as though she is Sojourner Truth, and she's telling a bit about the story of Sojourner Truth. Is it okay? Let's go to that clip right now and continue our discussion. All righty.
Well, I was born in 1797, born a slave to Isabella and James Bomfrey. I was one of 13 children, and I was sold from my parents when I was 9 years old. About 9 or 10, they sold me with a flock of sheep for $100. When they abolished slavery, he had promised to set me free. So I had met a man on his farm who was called Robert, but he didn't want us to have a relationship because he didn't own me also. But we had one child together, and Robert was beaten savagely, and I never saw him again. I walked off. I took my baby Sophia and I left. And I went to another farm up north where there was freedom. So that owner, that person paid my former owner $20 to let me be free. But my other children had to stay there because they had to be indentured servants until they were about 20 years old. So the slave owner sold my youngest son, Peter, to a farm in Alabama where he was treated harshly. So he helped me to get an attorney and get my child back. But most of my children were sold off to slavery, and I never saw them again. Then I went on to help to try to free other slaves, work with women to help them get their rights. And then I moved to Battle Creek, Michigan, where that's where I died in Battle Creek, Michigan in 1883. I had an ulcer on my leg, and at that time, black people couldn't see, you know, a regular doctor. So the veterinarian treated my leg, but sometime after that, I passed away.
All righty, and that was actress Bobby Washington telling a bit about the life of Sojourner Truth, speaking as though she were Sojourner Truth. And our guest in studio is artist Lane, and she had the honor of being, has the honor of being the first black woman to have a sculpture placed in the U.S. Capitol, and that is of Sojourner Truth. It was unveiled in a ceremony by First Lady Michelle Obama. I want to hear all about that. Installed in Emancipation Hall of the U.S. Capitol. And she joins us in studio, we're happy to say. Artist Lane, I want to talk a little bit about your path to being able to do this sculpture, right? And you also worked with Rosa Parks. And indeed, back in 1999, you were the first black woman to design a Congressional Medal of Honor when you were commissioned to do the Rosa Parks Medal presented by President Clinton back in 1999. So yes. Tell us about this Rosa Parks connection.
Well, I told you I married a man from Michigan. In fact, he was a newspaper writer for a black newspaper called the Michigan Chronicle in Detroit. Mm-hmm. And I met Mrs. Parks when a very successful doctor introduced us to her. We were invited to come down and meet her at his home. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea what she looked like. The photograph I hadn't been aware of. I later did a whole offset lithograph of a painting I called The Beginning after I met her. I thought she'd be a tiny, tall, strong woman like Maya Angelou or something. But no, she's soft-spoken.
Yeah.
And as I got to know her and travel with her on interviews and radio, whatever, they could never get her to say anything. You must have been angry, you must have this or that. And no, she had such a devout faith in God. Mm-hmm. I visited her. There's a little chapel in her honor at one of the churches mm-hmm. in the South, where she, in the church in Detroit, she was a very humble. To me, that's really a true sign of true spirituality, is the mm-hmm. humbleness with which, and the gratitude she... She had the greatest laugh. Yeah. By that time, I was married to someone from Philadelphia who had, my grandfather's had this hearty laugh. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, Mrs. Parks, if you told her a good joke, she had the heartiest laugh. I don't yeah. know if it's ever been recorded.
For a soft-spoken yes, person, yes. generally. Yeah. Rosa Parks, I mean, she was soft-spoken, as you said, a deeply spiritual person. Mm-hmm. But with a firm determination. Well, was that still there?
There's the power. The power comes from God. Determined, of course, she was the secretary of the NAACP, as everyone knows.
Yeah.
So they thought of her as just some soft-spoken, you know, quiet, reserved. Mm. That the power that caused her to have such calm and belief in the mission.
Yeah.
She was one of the two who chose Martin Luther King as a spokesperson. She was truly never a mother, but she had nieces and nephews. She was a very caring woman who loved her mother, and all that history of pride and came from centuries before her and led her to be much stronger than she appeared to be.
We are going to take a short station break, and when we return, we're going to continue our in-studio discussion with artist Lane. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Ed Asner, you're listening to Fearless Drive Time Radio, Sojourner Truth with host Margaret Prescott.
Welcome back. This is Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. We are now going to continue our discussion, our in-studio discussion with artist Lane. She was born in Canada near an all-black village of Chatham, Ontario, but she was born in North Buxton, and it was a stop that was on the Underground Railroad. She has quite a history, knew she was an artist, and she was 5 years old and was the personal artist to Mrs. Rosa Parks and the sculpture of Sojourner Truth, and the first black woman to have a sculpture placed in the U.S. Capitol happened to be the bust of Sojourner Truth, and it was unveiled in a ceremony that included First Lady Michelle Obama. So let's continue our discussion now with artist Lane. So it was then your connection with Rosa Parks. I know with the Sojourner Truth, a bust of Sojourner Truth, that it took really almost a 10-year campaign led by the late
C. Dolores Tucker,
right? And yes. Congress passed the bill back on December 6, 2006 to memorialize the work of Rosa Parks. And of course, Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee mm-hmm. was very involved in that on the House side and the Senate side, actually, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, and both of whom were at the unveiling.
Yes, it meant so much to them.
Yeah, I remember lobbying on something. I can't remember being in Washington, D.C. at a congressional black caucus. You know, they have those meetings in the fall. And running into Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, and she was most anxious to talk about Rosa Parks and about the project and about the unveiling. So tell us, how did that happen? And
I had gained quite a reputation in Detroit for portraits. I had done the mayor of Detroit, our first black mayor. But Rosa Parks had heard about me when she came out here. In fact, Oprah Winfrey, she would come every winter out of the cold of Detroit and stay at Leo Branton's home, the famous lawyer who handled Angela Davis. He and his brother. So that's how I met her when I was out here, and I asked if she would sit for a sculpture. I did it out of my heart, without a commission. And Anheuser-Busch at AT&T sponsored it on her 80th birthday in Washington. It was unveiled at the Smithsonian, and that's how I met C. Dolores Tucker, and that led to my that push to have me do the Sojourner Truth sculpture. The Sojourner Truth sculpture, there was a lot of objection by Congress. There was a committee who laid stipulations on my doing this portrait, that it could be 37 inches high, but she was 6 feet tall, and that I wanted to get that feeling of her height. No, I could only do it down here, just above the waist, obviously, the research on that dear lady, unlike my own aunt Mary Ann Shad Carey, there is only one photograph of her. She used to use in her lectures. She would sell these images of herself and to promote and to go on across the country, or at least. As many speeches as she could make, and I really know that my great aunt Mary Shad Carey, there was a divine program for my life in that when I was commissioned to do Sojourner Truth, that same week Canada had me, I had did a finished bronze of my great-great-aunt. So I flew from L.A., to Washington, and rather than come back to L.A., I just stopped off in Detroit, went across the border on the unveiling of my great-great-aunt Mary Ann Shad Carey's portrait.
Yeah, I'm looking at a little photo of that. Really, even in this little photo, just the power in it, powerful and determined.
With that, just that one, thank goodness it was a full-on headshot of her. There were relatives living in Canada who resembled her. I used them as models.
The cheekbones and the eyes and more. But just on Sojourner Truth, there is, you know, that famous speech that she gave that got my attention, yeah. and one of the reasons that my daughter's middle name is actually Sojourner, and the show is named after her, Sojourner Truth. You know, she was born, as we heard earlier, she was born into slavery in upstate New York, but she fought against slavery. She was separated from her children. She went through just the horrors of it, but she also fought for women's rights.
Absolutely.
Right, yeah.
Mott, mm-hmm. there are three white abolitionists. That's what got C. Dolores Tucker all excited. She said, Artis, you've got to come to Washington. There's this unfinished block of marble that the three white ladies, Susan B. Anthony, Mott, and I've forgotten the third.
Yeah.
You could put hers beside it, but I knew by law that I could not work on another artist's work.
Yeah.
She said, it's in the basement, the three white abolitionists. And she knew that Sojourner Truth had been a guest in one of the ladies' homes. They were fighting not only for women's rights, but also for the sake of the whole Constitution and all that it stood for, the American ideology
mm-hmm.
To be fulfilled. It was a deeper, not a self-interest struggle.
What I found this wonderful piece of Alfre Woodard reading part of that speech. Can we hear that now?
I just
absolutely love it because Alfre Woodard just nailed it.
She came and sat beside me at the unveiling.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Okay, let's hear that right now.
Well, cheering. Well, there is so much racket, there must be something out of kilter. I think twixt the Negroes of the South and the women of the North, all talking about rights, the white man will be in a fix pretty soon. But what's all this here talking about? That man over there says that women need to be helped into carriages and lifted over ditches to have the best place everywhere. Nobody ever helped me in a carriage or over a mud puddle or gives me the best place. And ain't I a woman? Look at my arm. I have plowed and planted. I can work as much. No man can head me. I gathered in the barns. And ain't I a woman? I could work as much and eat as much as a man when I get it. And bear the lash as well. And ain't I a woman? Cheering and seeing most of them sold off to slavery, and when I cried out in my mother's grief, none but Jesus heard me, and ain't I a woman? When they talk about this thing, what's that thing in the head? What they call it? Intellect. That's it, honey. What that got to do with a woman's rights, a Negro's rights? If my little cup won't hold but a pint and yours hold a quart, wouldn't you be mean not to let me have my little half measure full? Then, that man there, that night, that little man in black, he said, women can't have rights as much as men, 'cause Christ wasn't a woman. Where did your Christ come from? From God and a woman. Man ain't had nothing to do with it. If the first woman God ever made was strong enough to turn the world upside down all alone. These women together ought to be able to turn it back right side up again. And now they is asking to do it. The men better let them.
And Alfre Woodard, the actress, reading that very famous speech of Sojourner Truth. And our guest is artist Lane, who did the sculpture of Sojourner Truth that now sits in Emancipation Hall in the United States Capitol. She is our guest in studio. And
as I was saying, Alfre Woodard came, sat beside me so she could point me to the First Lady. I had never met the First Lady
The
unveiling.
Okay. Listening, Alfre did such a terrific job, and you clearly got a sense of the power of Sojourner Truth. Yes. You somehow were able to capture that spirit, I feel, from that piece of work that you did, the bust of Sojourner Truth.
I was able to have so much research on her. Okay. That I did many drawings of her. I just lived and breathed her, and I know she, as
got
I
inside
say,
her.
Oh, absolutely, the soul of her, and that she walked away. She did not walk off that plantation. She did not run from that plantation.
She walked.
She walked off.
Walked so, together, children.
Yes, and some of the older pictures are sort of arthritic, and she had using a cane from all the previous hard work, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That I'm a small person like Mrs. Park. I just really wanted in my work of art to convey that strength she had and still the womanly quality. LaTanya Jackson came and sat next to me. She had to catch a plane. But I've made many dear friends out here in Los Angeles who came to that unveiling at Rosa Parks.
People may also know that Sojourner Truth, she did get a bit of an income from her biography, The Narrative of Sojourner Truth, a Northern Slave, that was actually written by a friend of hers, Olive Gilbert. So
she had a great business sense, this lady, because she owned property.
She sure did.
And, as they said, near Detroit.
She developed these cards that she had. I mean, this was before the days of business cards.
Right,
you know, today everybody got a business card. Yeah. Well, Sojourner Truth had. What I'd like to do now, just looking at the clock, because time just flies when you're having this kind of conversation, is the dedication itself. And what was it? Well, let's play a bit from the dedication. I want to hear a little bit of what Hillary Clinton had to say.
Great.
Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. Mm-hmm. And, of course, First Lady Michelle Obama. Yeah. And, of course, Sheila Jackson Lee. So let's hear a bit of that and then get your reaction.
She did not know how to read or write. Her life was from the most humble and improbable circumstances. But she ended up counting President Lincoln and President Grant among her acquaintances. She never, never, despite what she went through, stopped believing in the promise of liberty. She lived long enough to see the end of slavery, but not the establishment of voting rights for women. The 19th Amendment would not be passed until 37 years after her death. But today she takes her place in this Capitol. And we are the better for it.
So, my friends, if you sit here today, able to walk the streets of Washington, D.C. in this land, equal and free, if as a woman you have achieved great success in your profession, in your home, in your church, in your place of worship, it is because we kept pressing the faith to understand that though Sojourner Truth's presence today by statute does not feed the world, but it is symbolistic, if you will, a symbolism of what we have to do. So we press for the truth. And through this effort, we have proven that the suffragist movement was enriched by African-American women and inspired by Sojourner Truth.
It is very appropriate that we gather here in Emancipation Hall, that this statue will be unveiled here, this bust of Sojourner Truth, so that every person who visits the capital of the United States will know her important role in America's history. And we'll see her as an inspiration for the work left undone to fight injustice, hatred, and cruelty in our society and in the world.
And just as Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Lucretia Mott would be pleased to know that we have a woman serving as the Speaker of the House of Representatives, I hope that Sojourner Truth would be proud to see me, a descendant of slaves, serving as the First Lady of the United States of America.
So, artist Lane, I'm looking also at a photo of that moment, and you made the bust, but you look entirely stunned when it was unveiled. Tell us, what was that moment like for you, hearing the speeches and then the unveiling itself?
Well, I had done all the dirty work at the foundry and all the supervising of the enlargement from a maquette, what they call a maquette, that Oprah Winfrey owns. Someone gave it as a gift to her.
Okay. So you did all this
the
work.
One who played the witch father in Annie, who's on now. Who's that actor?
Oh, I know who you mean, and I'm not. Jamie Foxx. Jamie Foxx.
He gifted Oprah with a portrait I did of her, but also that maquette or smaller piece of Sojourner Truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just been so blessed.
So seeing it, the unveiling, I mean, you look just surprised or stunned or some such, the expression.
It's really the magnificence of Washington, that capital, the history of it. Yeah. And then to see the scale of it, it was all right, because if it had done it smaller, it wouldn't have been that
significant. It wouldn't have worked.
Yes,
yeah.
And it was overscale because they were trying to – Congress had a group – that was to determine, tell me how much and what, how to do it. Not how to do it, but how much of it could be used. And I wanted to stress her being 6 feet tall and have more of the figure. And
right.
What worked in the opposite to bless was that it's a gigantic, heroic size, the head and the...
So you achieved your goal. And did you... get any accolades from the First Lady and the dignitaries who were there?
I have to tell you that there was a lady in charge of me to see to it that I would go backstage back after.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sidelined by a group of black newspaper people. I stood, talked to them, and found out that there'd been a reception and after back, in the White House, separate from.
So you were doing press, and no one really.
No, but she did hug me around the waist. Miss First Lady gave me a hug around the waist as we were unveiling it, and the week after she'd just been to London, and there was controversy about her. She wasn't supposed to touch or hug the Queen, she had, all of these, the
just
protocol.
Her way.
But all of this is all God-inspired, God-led, and I'm just so grateful to have been part of it.
Right, and this, in addition to just in terms of your final thoughts for young people who may be listening, who are interested in this kind of work and who are driven in the way that you were with this kind of gift, what would you say to them?
You know what? I was not supposed to speak. There was a Jewish rabbi, a female. It was all a women's program, more or less.
Okay.
The unveiling of it. And
you weren't supposed to speak.
Oz Scott from here, black producer here, got the message to the First Lady, the artist should speak. Because all the unveiling, no mention of the artist. And so I went up to the stage, went to the mic, and I found myself saying, for any of you parents who have a child gifted in the arts, encourage it. Don't discourage it for technology to be you must be that. Let that gift of God shine through them, and the same God that gave them a gift will see to it that they were provided for, just as my mother, who had doubted and said I had to teach or be a commercial artist. No, fine art was my goal, and that God that protects that protected all of this happening here is going on for everyone if we follow the gift that God has given us.
Right.
It's ultimate.
Yeah, and just recognizing that gift, whether one wants to call it God, however you want to say it, that gift and that genius that is within, and following your passion and following your path. Well, I certainly hope that our listeners, if you can go online and if you're lucky enough to be in Washington, D.C., and we know some of our listeners actually live in the area, and you have not been by to see this wonderful work, you will be in for a treat.
Thank you for this opportunity. My website is artistlane.com, which could tell a longer story of the
And we'll
the
have
whole
samples
works.
Of your work.
Yes.
Other,
mm-hmm.
because there's a lot that we didn't get to talk about today.
I know.
Because your work is, you have been and you are prolific and just incredible work. And we really want to thank S. Pearl Sharp.
Yes.
For making all of this possible.
Yes,
she's wonderful.
Dear friend.
Yeah. We so love her and appreciate her work with Sojourner Goes to the Movies, but not only that, with all of her contributions to the community. So, Artist Lane, we hope to speak with you again, and we could go in depth about some of your other work.
That would be wonderful. Be pleased to come back.
Thank you so very much for joining us. Today's show produced by S. Pearl Sharp and Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank the entire Sojourner Truth team, Sherelle Withers, our assistant producer, Kevin Walker. We'd like to thank Jonathan Alexander, Mr. T. Teddy Robinson, all who helped to make this show possible. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter, look for So True KPFK, and like and friend us, please, on Facebook, look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott, and check out our website, www.sotrueradio.org. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.